Remember last week when I said that Pekka would either have the DNA of the aliens course through him or be fighting with Miguel Oliveira? That second one would have been very, very generous.
Welcome back to Motorsport 101. So, check out my notes here. You crashed trying to push and pass Somkiat Chantra? Oh,
Oh
boy.
man, Chantra came good just as he lost his seat? No.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah, welcome to episode 620 in Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us once again. And, oh boy. MotoGP's Indonesian Grand Prix weekend has now probably cemented its reputation as the biggest outlier round on the entire MotoGP calendar, because there is a large amount of bullshit that went on during this weekend, to say the least. We had a surprise sprint winner, an even bigger surprise Grand Prix winner, a huge injury, and somehow the factory Ducati team not scoring a single point in the Grand Prix. Yeah. It says a lot when Somkiat Chantra now has more points in Indonesia as a MotoGP rider than Marc Marquez does.
Fucking hate it here.
Yeah, get used to it, buddy. It's only going to be painful for the rest of us. I'm Dre Harrison, as always. Joining me alongside is Cameron Buckley. How's it going, mate?
There have been calls for mercy. God has mercy. I do not. Marco Bezzecchi, pair of pliers and a blowtorch. Wet
Oh dear.
socks. Wet sleeves when doing the dishes.
Yeah, I hope you snag your balls and
I
don't
hope
slip your
they're out
jeans
of
on.
your favorite cereal at the supermarket.
You could tell we're totally unbiased on this podcast. Yeah, definitely. No,
I'm
no idea
mad
what
as hell.
you're and let me guess, you're not gonna take this anymore?
I have no choice. Mark is out for the next two races.
Now, I'm gonna force some mercy upon you here, briefly, because I feel like this is a good time to talk about it, because we only found out yesterday in the news that your beloved Porsche are leaving the World Endurance Championship at the end of this season, and I wanted to get your two cents on the matter, because you are a resident sports car guy. Well, apart from RJ, who's now a professional sports car guy, but you were our original sports car guy. Obviously, huge blow to the World Endurance Championship. Porsche is the World Endurance Championship, really. You know, arguably the most iconic endurance racing brand of them all. And it sucks, man. But I wanted to hear it from you, the big Porsche man of the pod. How's it feeling? This has been rumored for a little while, but to actually now see it officially confirmed must just suck.
Shit sucks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's what do you think my take is? I had multiple like people in my mentions in Discord. One Ferrari fan slurring me in a Discord that you're not in. Thankfully, as that I'm a stupid Porsche fan. Well, you didn't use that word. It just fucking. There's been so much venom about this on the socials, and it's only really been news for a day. For those who don't know, Porsche did not have a great quarter last quarter. Okay in America, but not good in China, in addition to kind of global EV demand cooling a little bit and pivoting their whole brand to EV, which I don't think was ever a good idea.
I think the figure was something like 91% down in Europe over the last quarter, or something
91%
crazy.
down overall,
That's wild.
which is to say they still made a bunch of money, just nowhere near what they were making. Because usually Porsche just is printing money at all times. So
Yeah.
they're in a dry spell. They're in a dry spell. They say they're pivoting to focus more on Formula E. I say that no one believes you. You need
Well,
more people.
they'd already committed to Formula E through 2030 in Gen 4 anyway, so saying they're focusing there is dumb. They were always going to be in Formula E. They committed to Gen 4 years ago.
Formula E isn't focusing on Formula E. I don't know what they're doing focusing on
exactly. Exactly. It's just like, waste
of everyone's time. They are sticking around in IMSA.
Yep.
And I think that is part of the other elephant in the room, that WEC is a more expensive calendar, mainly with through the travel.
Yep.
But the head of Porsche Motorsport, Thomas Laudenbach, has also been as vocal as you're allowed to be, given that there is a gag order against talking about the BOP from the ACO,
mm-hmm.
that they do not appreciate how the series is being run. And with the, I'm going to rip the bandage off, the complete shit show that has been the WEC's balance of performance, I'm not shocked that if they had to pick between one of two series, they picked IMSA. I'm really not.
Well, the BOP and IMSA has not been anywhere near as harsh. I mean, they only threw the hammer at Porsche after winning, what was it, the first six of IMSA this past season?
They were undefeated. And the thing is, they weren't even undefeated on pace because BMW was right there with them. Frankly speaking, Wayne Taylor Racing needs an act of God to help them with the Cadillac this year, because anything less is not getting them a race win. And Acura were quick but messy operationally.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of factors that I think has culminated in this. I do think they'll be back. I do hope that they'll be back, because they have clearly been the best LMDH on the whole. Over in WEC, they still have an outside shot at the title in the Drivers' Championship in Bahrain. We'll see if they can go out high there. I'm just not happy. I'm not happy about it. It sucks to see, because there's always a canary in the coal mine anytime that a bust cycle starts to brew with sports car racing, and I really hope it's not Porsche. Because it was Porsche in 1998 at the end of the GT1 regs, where they were the first one out. We know that they were going to be back in, but that car was canceled. And 2 years later, the only manufacturers left were Audi and Peugeot. And that's because I don't respect the original Cadillac Northstar LMP enough to actually call it a Le Mans prototype 900.
And look, as a more casual sports car fan and, you know, occasional viewer, I know that there's more coming to replace Porsche's loss. We know Genesis are going to be on the grid next year. We know McLaren will be on the grid in 2027. But nothing will fill the hole that Porsche will leave behind. They are endurance racing, as far as I'm concerned. And one of the big three, you know, alongside Audi and Toyota of the modern age. To lose one of the big three, in my opinion, is a huge blow. That sucks for everybody. And no one wins when a mark of that prestige and caliber doesn't feel like it's worth their time competing anymore. That just sucks for everybody.
I hate to think that they looked at what happened at this year's Le Mans and went, you know what? This isn't worth it. Because the six crew ran as perfect a Le Mans as you will ever see, and it just didn't matter. And we know why it ended up not mattering. And Ferrari bugged my internet that week to make sure that I couldn't talk about it. But they've got a lot of manufacturers right now, and they have a lot of interest, and they really need to not squander it over at the FIA and ACO. Because I don't feel like more seasons like this are going to make brands want to stick around.
Well, we've seen the meetings in the internal dialogue. The general impression that I think that most people are given is that the BOP has failed for what this era is. I know it's hard to please everybody where there's so much manufacturer support in the series now. But
you can't have cars swinging 1.5-2 seconds a lap race to race, because it's their turn to hold the golden cock.
It's not right. And look, we just had the 6 hours of Fuji. Great race. It's on YouTube in full for free. Go watch it if you haven't already. It's well worth it. That was probably the best BOP of the season. And even then, Toyota had no chance of winning, which just sucks.
Toyota had no chance of winning. And we know the Peugeot 9X8 is a congenitally defective car that we know that they are intending to ditch. And yet they led a fair portion of that race and might have won were it not for a very inspired strategic decision by Alpine.
Yeah. Says a lot about the state of play in WEC right now, but we wish Porsche the best. And hey, at least you'll get more insane Kevin Estra bullshit.
Kevin Estra bullshit is coming stateside, baby.
It's an American tour. We all know
hashtag
that when
iCabs.
We all know that
he
when
was
you do
nuts
well
in that Fuji race too.
We all know that when you do well in Europe, inevitably you try to invade America. That's how this goes. So have fun with that over there. That's going to be...
That's a charged comment in these trying times.
Not my intention.
Good Lord.
Well, let's go back to Indonesia, shall we? Yeah, we'll talk about... Oof, that was not my intention, chat. Shut up. But we'll talk about MotoGP in Indonesia. I was like, I hear a scoppity coming from an Englishman.
I was going to say, you've pissed off the Americans, the Irish, the Scottish. Anyone else?
Does it sound better when I say it was an accident?
So am I, Raptor. You're not special.
Anyway, let's talk about Indonesia, shall we? We'll talk about Marco Bezzecchi's dominance until it wasn't. Fermin Aldeguer becoming the first rookie MotoGP winner since 2021 and Jorge Martin. Ducati's horrible, terrible, no good weekend, and the fact that Marc Marquez is now going to be on the shelf for the next 3 weeks.
Keep in mind, we need to qualify that. Ducati's terrible, no good, very bad weekend where one of their teams scored a 1-3 finish.
Yeah. Context is everything. And a whole lot more in the junior classes as well. But places you can find us real quick, youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, or on Twitter, motorsport_101. Our video highlights are on motorsport101 pod on Instagram and m101_podcast on TikTok. Our website, motorsport101.com. We are starting to lift some of the restrictions on all those outside countries I was talking about as well. It looks like some of the AI meddling has died down a little bit. So we're slowly raising the barriers on certain countries. Stay tuned on that, by the way. If you really like us, though, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. Get upgraded to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. It's Jason, Vic, Kira, and Raptor all destroying me in the comment section right now as we speak. Thanks for listening, you bastards. without further ado, let's get into the Indonesia Grand Prix.
Another case of a weekend that told two very different stories. Mandalika's unique layout and very hot conditions meant... Dre, that's next year's tire manufacturer. Michelin...
I put Pirelli in there. Whoops.
Michelin had to bring a special heat-resistant casing for their rear slick tires, and it had dramatic effect up and down the field. Marco Bezzecchi, though, was the man in form. He owned Saturday, annihilating the field and qualifying with record speed, and despite bogging down at the start, came back from sixth to a last-lap pass for the win in the sprint race against Fermin Aldeguer. But in the Grand Prix, it would be Bez that would suffer a huge crash, completely missing his breaking point and crashing into Marc Marquez after botching yet another start, causing a broken bone and ligament damage in Marquez's right collarbone. Marc Marquez will be out for both the Australian and Malaysian Grand Prix as he rests from his injuries. I mean, what's the point? He already won the title. He can take all the time off he needs.
No surgery required, thankfully, so that's a big blessing for Mark in that regard.
100%. Meanwhile, Fermin Aldeguer, hey, remember that guy? Got to the front off the start, and let's call it what it was, he took the fuck off. He dominated the race by 7 seconds, the biggest winning margin in 2025, and first MotoGP victory for a rookie since Jorge Martin got his first in 2021. It also means that the Grazini team now has a race winner in all five riders that have raced for him since Nadia took over. That's Enea Bastianini, both of the Marquez brothers, Fabio DiGiantonio, and now Fermi. Behind, a colossal six-rider scrap led to another second-place finish for Pedro Acosta and Alex Marquez in third, sealing Grazini's best-ever team result in this sport. And they've been at this a long time. Dre, Fermin Aldeguer, MotoGP race winner. It feels kind of dirty saying he got a race win before Pedro Acosta.
Pedro is going to be somewhere absolutely seething mad. You all know Pedro is a sneaky bastard at the best of times. He's going to be absolutely livid that Fermin beat him to his first win. And rightly so. I mean, look, called a spade a spade. He was the only man who was in Marco Bezzecchi's postcode all weekend. And
that's generous because he was a few tenths off and then everyone else was the better part of a second off.
Yeah, I think it was 3 tenths on Fermin in terms of raw pace in the sprint when Bez was gunning him down at the end. Look, you can only beat what they put in front of you. Bez was landslide favourite to win this race. His race lasted 35 seconds. Fermin got to the front and then took off. He was 0.6, 0.7 a lap faster than the scrapping field behind him. Completely dominant performance. And look, I've not been the most compelling Fermin guy. I know some people have sworn by Fermin Aldeguer from the time he was winning races in Moto2. I get why to a degree. I'm one of the people that hasn't been as high on him. I think he's had a very typical rookie season. A lot of highs, a lot of lows. I will admit,
he doesn't know enough to be afraid often.
I will admit, though, when the highs are there, he hits hard. There's no doubt about it. You know, when he gets it, he gets it good. The double podium at Le Mans, the second in Austria, and that rampant tire comeback through the field in the second half of that race. And here, where he was, at one point, he was 9 seconds in front of the field, which is crazy. He eased off a lot at the end of that race. But to win any MotoGP modern era race by 9 seconds in this field is an immense accomplishment. That is shining talent. And that's why Ducati took a punt on this kid, because the raw speed has always been there with Fermin Aldeguer. And when he gets it right, he gets it very right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm someone who is high on him, and like, his highs, as you said, are tremendous. I mean, that the podium at Le Mans in very trying conditions, said he didn't know enough to be afraid. He just went out and rode that bike into the ground and was the fastest man on track for a good portion of that race. Mm. In this one, he was able to get out to the front, and while we had that 6-bike scrap behind him, he was just on a nice Sunday ride.
Exactly. Just absolutely casually at the front. And look, I think a lot of credit also needs to go to Fermin Aldeguer's legendary crew chief, Mr. Frankie Carchetti, who is...
He is a rookie whisperer.
That's now the fourth MotoGP rider he's won a Grand Prix with as a crew chief, which is wild in this modern era where we've had so many dominant names. Like, on paper, none of these dudes are top end except Marc Marquez, arguably. And yet, he's won with 4 different riders since becoming a headlining crew chief. That's a tremendous testament to his skill.
The work he did with DiGiAntonio ended up saving DiGiAntonio's career. He was able to get him to unlock the MotoGP element. And it made him a race winner in dueling in 1v1 combat with Pecco Bagnaia back before he lost his mind.
And no disrespect.
He is so good, man.
Yeah. And no disrespect to Fermin, but a lot of this comes from Frankie's development of him as a rider in his crew chief. He's been intentionally trying to take grip off the GP24 and actually neuter some of that incredible rear-end grip and acceleration that Ducati is known for, because he reckons it's made Fermin a more well-rounded rider. And because he was able to mitigate some of that rear-end grip that pushes the front down, like we saw with Alex Marquez in Catalunya when he crashed, because he's able to mitigate that with the way the bike was set up, that's what unlocked all the speed out of Fermin, because it wasn't the usual Ducati strengths that turned into a weakness on a low grip, slippery, very hot track that had reinforced tires, as we saw in this weekend, because Indonesia gets so hot. Frankie's brilliant at this. He is one of the most uniquely gifted minds in MotoGP, and that is a rare thing when the sport has become so uniform in the last few years.
Yeah, and all of the, I mean, Ducati put out the statistic when they had won the championship, over a terabyte of race data behind this championship that they have gathered back. It used to fit on a CD, even in the mid 2000s, because it was so much more human and mechanical rather than the data driven sport that we're in now. But Frankie just has the touch, and he's able to get creative, and he is the definition of a crew chief that makes his riders better riders. And he's done yet another one.
Marc Marquez, Yoann Mir, Fabio Di Giantonio, and now Fermín Aldeguer, all race winners under his crew chief ability. It's quite the testament to Frankie, who's quite frankly, in my opinion, the best crew chief in MotoGP at this point. It's just a consistent pattern of brilliance from him. I mean, we got to talk a little bit about Marco Bezzecchi, because I think Matt Oxley summed it up quite well, where he wrote about it and said, Bez had more pace than he knew what to do with.
Which he was too fast. Such a thing is possible. I mean, from the minute we put the bikes on track, it was all about Aprilia and all about Marco Bezzecchi. He was clearly the fastest in practice. He was clearly the fastest in qualifying. And he completely blew the start on both races. He was clearly the fastest man in the sprint.
I think David Emmett said 3 temps on Aldeguer, 4 temps on Acosta, and I think it was 6 temps on the rest of the field. That kind of margin in MotoGP is very rare nowadays. So to be able to destroy a field like that single hand, not even Mark has done that most of the season, where he's got 2/3 of a second on the majority of the runners in the field. Yeah, just
not often.
Just phenomenal pace. And like I said, he botched the start. It took him half the sprint to get past Luca Marini. Only had about 5 laps of open air and was able to just do enough to beat Aldeguer to the line in the sprint on the final lap to beat him. He would have won this MotoGP race by a country mile if it wasn't for the fact that he caused that huge wreck at turn 5. And oh dear, that was such a shame. Like that's one of those, wait, you're nowhere near the apex. Holy shit. And yeah, just straight off at turn 5. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. And again, completely botched the start. Worse than he did, actually, in the sprint. And you could see him visibly faster than everyone around him. It feels like he just got the red mist.
He panicked. I think he panicked because he saw Marc Marquez was in front of him. Because Marc didn't have a particularly good qualifying. He had to go through Q1 for the first time this season after crashing twice on Saturday morning. And I think he panicked. I think he saw Marc in front of him and he panicked and he went for a big lunge that he was nowhere near hitting, completely misses his breaking point, has to go wide, and unfortunately Marquez's bike is in the way. And it was a very nasty 100-mile-an-hour crash. You know, Mark, we were very lucky that Mark's reconstructed arm was okay in this instance.
Yeah, the damage happened kind of upstream of that. Mark was also very lucky to not get his left ankle get caught in the bikes. He was about 2 inches from that. Yeah, it was a dive at a turn, which is not... It was not a passing opportunity.
No.
And it wasn't. And just ended up running Mark over. And Mark goes flying off into the gravel trap, and the gravel trap effectively kicks him up. He gets clipped in the collarbone, and that's that.
The gravel was apparently very, very nasty, so much so that in the Parc Fermé room, because Alex is in there finishing third, he's like, well, is Mark... Because I know Fermín asked, is Mark okay? And he was like, he's hurt, but like the gravel here is shit. You could literally hear it on the hard camera. Probably not the best look for Dorna that they go into a Grand Prix where the gravel is being criticized on open air, but here we are. We're lucky that both men were able to walk away from that one. Bez was fine in the end, went to the medical center, got a checkup, no fractures. Mark, as mentioned, broke a bone in his collarbone. There's ligament damage there, but thankfully no surgery required. He could just sit home and rest.
Yeah, if there's no surgery required, that means they're confident that it's going to heal up fine on its own. It's a good thing you wrapped up the title last time out, because otherwise we would have a, an 07 Loeb situation, 06 Loeb situation.
Oh, yeah. Winning while injured.
But yeah, this whole weekend was just upside down with this tire that just was shoving the front of certain bikes around, and none had it worse than the Ducatis that weren't being run by Grazini. Both VR46s were pretty much nowhere. Mark seemed to crack the code a little bit near the end of the sprint, but up to that point was not great and did not have a good qualifying. But man, Pecco Bagnaia.
Oh boy.
Where do we even start with this one?
Is this the new rock bottom after dominating in Motegi? Because it feels like it.
We'll give a little bit of background to this. Thankfully, Ducati has lifted the veil a little bit, which is to say, I think Gigi Deligna hit his head in that swimming pool a little too hard, called up Matt Oxley and said, "All right, you want to know what's actually going on?
Come to my office."
Yeah. Which, man, for Gigi Deligna is brilliant, but that is a stupid, stupid thing to do. Jumped in the wrong end of a swimming pool.
He was, he was busted up in the
paddock. He was visibly bandaged in the garage all weekend.
Which, he dove into the shadow end of a swimming pool, which I think Valentino Rossi fans have been doing for about 15 years now. But, you know.
Oh, God.
How drunk had he had to have been to be in that situation?
More or less than Oscar Piastri fans after Singapore.
Give me the over.
Back on track. We finally found out. The COVID has been paid off by Volkswagen Group to stop me. We know what the GP25 is and what Pecco's problem has been. It's the ride height device. Because the ride height device is actually more aggressive than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
How it drops the bike is more aggressive. And it takes feeling out of the front end for Pecco. So what did they do before Motegi? They built a GP25 with a GP24 ride height device and swing arm. He's back to his absolute best. He destroys the field in Motegi. And then we went here. And between the hot slick, taking feeling, the casing being stiffer, and the Ducati doesn't like that, and the fact that he likes the short front forks that actually bottom out when he brakes, it destroyed the feeling on the bike. It was just shaking. Its bike was just shaking the whole damn time. Is that an Eagles fan in the background, I hear?
No, actually. I wish it was, but no. Not yet.
Pecco was 2 seconds a lap off the pace.
Yeah.
He was half a second off of Chantra for most of this weekend.
When he crashed in the Grand Prix, he apologized to his team because he said he was trying to push to get past Chantra and tucked the front and crashed at the final corner. Dear God.
Crashed out of last place, and he never looked better than last place all weekend.
It was so bad that some of his fans thought he crashed on purpose to make a point. Which is complete bullshit. But
this isn't Maverick Vinales.
No. And Pecco would never do something like that. Let me point out here. And no rider worth his salt would. We're not going to potentially risk hurting yourself on purpose to make a point that their bike is shit. No. Bollocks. But it says a lot that his fans are now been put through the ringer so hard this year that they genuinely were prepared to entertain the idea that he crashed a bike on purpose. That kind of says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, and what it is that because of how that ride height device reacts compared to last year, so he can't actually hear the front tire. No. It's taken just enough out of the front tire in trying to gain on the rear of the bike. Mark can get around that because Mark Marquez's entire riding style is just using the front tire and every bit of rubber on it to lever it to get lap time. And Pecco he rides and manages the opposite end of the bike to Mark, and Mark can manage that. And it really shouldn't be as big a balance shift as it is, but he just cannot get around it. And this was like, he was on the same bike as he was in Motegi. And this is the worst he's ever looked as a MotoGP rider.
So bad that Bagnaia was declined from talking to the press on Sunday afternoon. Davide Tardozzi, he said they were going out of their way to, quote, protect him. That's not good. And I say that's not good doubly because, say what you will about Pecco, he's a consummate pro. He has been incredibly patient and very understanding of the scenario that he's been put in, which has been, look, say what you will about anybody, but when you're a two-time MotoGP champion, a guaranteed future Hall of Famer, and you've had a year that's essentially been a write-off, he's barely said a word wrong about the team publicly all year. He's brushed himself off and he's tried to move on to the next round. As he's a pro's pro. I can't say a bad word about Pecco as a human being. If it's getting to the point where the team has to protect you from saying something crazy, I can't begin to imagine the tension on that side of the garage.
He was smiling and going thumbs up to the camera when we had the graphic on screen that he was going to Q1. It's so bad he can only sit there and laugh.
I've got nothing. Like I said, this feels like a new nadir for Pecco Bagnaia, but how...
He went from zero to hero to zero in the space of 3 weekends.
Has a MotoGP rider ever had two horrendous weekends with a double victory in the middle of it? It's a shit
probably
sandwich.
Probably Maverick Vinales.
That's probably
the only other rider where I can think of anything as just violently up and down with seemingly no pattern to it.
Yeah, that's about it. And we all know Maverick is Maverick by name, Maverick by nature. But like, it's Pecco. If anything, Pecco won two world championships because of his consistency more than anything else. Okay, not so much in 22. But
more consistent than who he was racing against. He can only beat who's in front of you.
Yes, but at least you knew, especially last year, that if Pecco didn't have a disastrous weekend, there'd be a 50-50 chance he wins a Grand Prix. He won 11 out of 22 last year. Right.
I say a bad weekend with him staying on the bike would have been second or third last year.
Yeah. This and if it was a good weekend, he wins.
Yeah. This is, if it's a bad weekend, he's last on the road. By the way, with the points that they scored in the sprint, Ducati had the triple crown.
Yeah. They won the team title after the sprint on Saturday.
With all this going on, gestures wildly.
It's incredibly weird that they've won a triple crown via dominating the point standings, having Marc Marquez win 11 Grand Prix this season. He's only going to end up taking part in 20 Grand Prix at best, by the way the year shakes out. while also winning the team's title off the back of Pecco Bagnaia's season completely internally collapsing halfway through. Because it wasn't all that bad until the summer break.
He was just getting beaten. He wasn't last on the road.
Yeah, he was finishing third most of the time. This is just disastrous.
He was half a second off of Chantra, who was getting fired.
Heading off to Honda's World Superbike team.
Superbike.
Oh, yeah,
get ready to learn ninth place every weekend, buddy.
And he's not been a particularly great Philipp Laiden guy either.
No. No, I'm actually incredibly devastated that we're not going to see Mark at Phillip Island on this bike.
Oh, I'm gutted.
Because he put on a fucking show last year on the GP23.
So gutted in that sense. And look, props to Mark. He was a better man than me. He immediately called off the dogs, went on social media with his arm in a sling and said, please don't attack Marco. These things happen. Basically, it was a very...
God has mercy. I do not.
Literally in this case. And to be fair, Bez went on socials later that night and fully owned it. Basically just said, it was my fault, completely got it wrong. Apologies to Mark and apologies to Ducati. Just straight up owned it. Those two have grown up
quite a bit in the last 2 years.
Those two men used to hate each other. Like, Bez at one point stormed into Mark Marquez's garage when he was still a Honda rider and said, you need to be booted out of MotoGP because you're so dangerous. They've grown a lot of respect for each other this year from the amount of fighting they've had to do. I think Misano was a bit of a game changer where Bez saw what Mark had to do to win that race and was like, okay, fuck me, he really is that good. Basically.
Didn't leave him a choice.
Yeah, basically. Just a shame all around, really, that Mark is still one of the most entertaining people here, even when he's completely dominating, which says it all, really. Anything else mentioned from this grid cam? Because we had Yamaha show some promise.
Well, I will say as well, Ducati is now in a weird place because they have one rider who is just mentally shot.
Mm-hmm.
And a bike that will need to be ridden in Phillip Island because we are going to be beyond the 10-day rule. Probably Pirro.
I think Pirro's given up the wild card, and I think it might be Nicolò Bulliger.
That'd be sweet.
He's testing the...
Oh, I don't have to deal with Toprak over here. He's going to try and get one in before Toprak comes over next year.
I think Bulliger is testing for them next year anyway, so they might as well give him the bike from now and just say, here, it's a free weekend. Consider it a reward for your hard work in World Superbikes this year. Here you go.
Yes, this is your reward for Toprak having his boot firmly between your lungs and colon all year.
Yes, have fun with that.
That'll be cool. Promising signs for Yamaha? No, I'm not even going to entertain that bullshit.
Look, Alex Rins was genuinely competitive in a MotoGP weekend, arguably for the first time all year.
He also bolted the soft tires on to get that and then was getting shot to pieces at the end of the race. Next.
You've got to start somewhere.
Yes. It's the equivalent of Gran Turismo, bolting soft tires on just to feel good.
It's going to be a fantastic lap and a half, let me tell you.
The Super Softs in GT3. Man, these things are warm out. It's a warm-up lap.
The Casey Stoner special, quite frankly.
Yeah.
It was a very fun fight for second, though, I will say.
Yeah, Pedro Acosta would not be denied and was willing to ride through anyone to do it.
Yeah, Alex Marquez passed him. Alex Marquez passed him with about 6 laps to go. And you're thinking, okay, Rossini 1-2. And then next thing you know, tips say, oh shit, Pedro's back. Oh damn. Okay.
Because he spent the first 2/3 of that race just holding up a whole armada of motorcycles from every manufacturer, I might add.
Yeah, we had Raul Fernandez up there for Aprilia. We had, you know, Luca Marini on the Honda, who should have had a podium.
God damn it. God fucking damn it. We almost had 2 podiums in a row. This updated factory Honda, LCR doesn't have it yet. It's not a bad piece.
Luca looked the best he's looked on a Honda in MotoGP so far. And he's had some good weekends this season. This was great. He was in contention for a podium. Genuine contention for a podium. He was really strong. He was punted by a rule, and that's probably the only reason why he fell back to like fifth or sixth at the end of the race.
A couple of people got punted by him. Raul Fernandez was on the fastest bike on this Grand Prix, and he did precisely nothing with it because he was just super impatient.
He rode like a terrorist.
He rode like Alex Dunn drives.
Which is a shame because this is the one time where Raul Fernandez finishing sixth in a Grand Prix is a disappointment.
I was going to say, he would have bit your arm off for that earlier this year.
A month ago, that would have been a brilliant result. Now it's like, well, why didn't he get on the podium? Fuck off. Basically. But yeah, Raul was great all weekend. Could have had a podium. Instead, ended up in sixth, which again, still a good result for the team and a good result for Trackhouse. I think it's their best Grand Prix finish since Agoura on opening day. Back in Thailand, but
no Agoura again this weekend with the wrist injury as well.
Poor man.
Kira, you say that's an insult to Alex Dunn. I counter with no.
Anyway, no. But
I watched Monaco. I saw what happened. Only two Aprilias this weekend, and for a company that had clearly the fastest motorcycle here, they did fuck all with it in race trim.
And if they were very lucky that Bez left Mandalika fine, because if he didn't, they'd be coming to Phillip Island with one healthy rider.
Yeah.
Which would have been wild.
Yeah, and that also, I mean, back to the fight for third with Pecco's implosion. Bez didn't really capitalize on what really should have been a nailed-on 37.
Yeah, should have had a perfect weekend, didn't. And that's going to be a real shame for him because he still has a good chance at third. And he basically missed an open goal, which is, you know, a shame. And the guys in the chat say, Raul's making me question why yet he's been there since 22 and barely any improvement. Kieran Raptor in the chat, I disagree. Fernandez has actually been pretty damn good for the second half of this season. He's regularly now in the top 10. He's definitely gotten better with Trackhouse this year. This has been, I think, the breakthrough season that Fernandez has been looking for. Yes, this result was a bit disappointing, but his overall results across this season have been very solid.
They're getting a lot better. I just think Trackhouse themselves have been very exceedingly mid this year after Agoura's, you know, surprise early result. Could say that about Aprilia in general, other than Marco Bezzecchi. It's all been either mid to awful.
Yeah. Very, very much so. I have to say, breakthrough season after 3 years, though, and I've said, like, Luca Marini rides for your team. Just a thought.
But yeah, I mean, Factory Honda right now are... I don't think they're winning races anytime soon. But they're getting there.
Certainly a step in the right direction. In fact, so much so...
More money! More money into the black hole! More!
So much so that apparently Honda are on the brink of getting out of tier D concessions.
Yeah, they're less than 1% away from getting into tier C. Now, if you had handed me that at the start of the season, I would have ripped your arm out of socket and run away with it.
Begs the question, though, where's Johann Zarco been for the last few weekends?
On an outdated Honda and trying to get a new one via destroying all of his old ones.
Silly boy. Got his contract and immediately started ripping the shit out of it.
To be fair, LCR in general were just ass cheeks this weekend.
Dog water. Some other news coming out of Grand Prix motorcycle racing this weekend. Congrats to Jose Antonio Rueda, Moto3 world champion, and has completely dominated Moto3 this year.
Where do they keep finding these kids?
It's a conveyor belt. It's ridiculous.
It's a conveyor belt of ass whooping.
It's like Spaniards. Next one up. Next one up. just keep churning them out. They found another stupid fast, ridiculously consistent, excellent Spanish rider. Not quite David Alonso levels of brilliance, but still ridiculously strong. I think he's won 8 races this season, which is still...
only 8. He's only a crushingly dominant champion.
Yeah, 100-point-plus championship lead, and he rides the number 99 in tribute to Jorge Lorenzo, and I love that Lorenzo was one of the first dudes to congratulate him after the fact. Very similar riding style, I must say. And not a bad man to learn from.
Fluid riding.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's worth noting as well, there was a pretty horrific crash that was red flagged at the end of that race. Get well soon, David Munoz, because that was a horrible, broken femur.
Season-ending crash.
He's out for the year.
Yeah, a broken femur can kill you if it's not addressed quickly. So we're glad that he will be all right, but it will take some time.
Fucking second broken femur of the year. Jesus Christ. Moto 3's had a rough year in that sense. Very glad that Luca Linetta's come back strong and was on the podium this weekend. And David Munoz, best wishes to him. Also, title implications in Moto 2. Diego Moreira, the future Honda MotoGP rider with LCR, dominated the Moto 2 race in Mandalika, won pretty comfortably. Manu Gonzalez tried to follow him and finished in second. However,
until he very suddenly didn't.
He was disqualified in his post-race scrutineering check because it turns out he had non-homologated software.
The Agoura surprise, derogatory.
Oh, non-homologated old software he had on his bike that wasn't checked over by the FIM. That is an immediate disqualification. It's not even a performance enhancer, but it is an immediate disqualification because you are in breach of the technical regulations. Yes, you failed
scrutineering is what it is.
Yeah, it's an immediate DQ. He was disqualified from second place, and that's 20 points gone, meaning it's just a 9-point gap. Between Moreira and Gonzalez in the championship fight in Moto 2. Ugh, I feel so bad for Manu. That is such a raw deal. What was looking like a comfortable title fight is now going to be a genuine thriller between him and Moreira down the stretch.
He did everything right. That is just, it's one of those shitty things that, like, it's not even, it's probably just a random mechanic's fault that pressed the wrong button in a file manager, and that's it.
If Manu Gonzalez loses the Moto 2 title by less than 20 points,
that is going to be a galling defeat.
Ugh. He's already not getting a Moto GP seat for next year, and not even winning the title on top of that would be a hammer blow for the man. It would be such a shitter for a man who's, for me, been the most consistently excellent Moto 2 rider this season, and I don't think it's particularly 100%. Close either. He should be in Moto GP next year. It's a crying shame he isn't, and he might even have a title to his name first, which is such a shame. Immensely talented rider. P.S. Please stop fucking talking about the goddamn passport. TNT, I'm looking in your direction, because every time it's like, oh, why is Manu not in MotoGP? You know why. You know why. Because you spun up half the bullshit about the fact he's Spanish, and that goes against him. The fact that that goes against him is just bollocks. I can't stand it. Put him in MotoGP. He's good enough to be there, damn it.
Well, the good news is TNT is going to drop the coverage when Jake Dixon leaves next year.
Who the hell are they going to talk about in Moto 2? Joe Roberts. They're going to talk about Joe Roberts again. Maybe this will be the year that Roberts puts it all together, because if they don't love a Brit, they'll love an American.
What a terrible fate.
I can't. Dude, Joe Kelso is going to be riding for Michael Laverty's Moto 3 team next year.
I love conflicts of interest.
They love an Australian too, so they're going to be talking all about Joe Kelso in Michael Laverty's team next year. I hate it. I'm going to throw up in a bucket. MotoGP is back in a week and a half.
I think the flu is back in the driver's seat with Dre.
Yeah, I feel it coming back with a quickness. MotoGP is back next weekend with the big one. The Australian Grand Prix from Phillip Island. Yes! Phillip Island.
The best motorcycle racing track on this planet or any other.
Yes! Oh. Love me some Phillip Island.
There's no Mark Marquez.
Damn it!
I'm pissed.
The one flyaway round that is worth getting up at balls o'clock in the UK to go and watch. Do so. God damn it. Philip Island next week. We'll be talking about it then. Our IndyCar season review is next week. I promise. I swear to God, if it isn't,
don't promise something we can't guarantee.
Shut up. By hook or by crook, it is happening next week. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cam Buckley. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Yeah, my sentence for Marco Bezzecchi. A week with Krista Hardy.
Judgment.